Don't look at President Clinton. Those were the instructions Raed Ahmed was given before the opening ceremony of the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta. The stocky Iraqi weightlifter was told Clinton, who was in attendance, and the United States wanted to destroy his country and should be shown no respect. The message had come from Iraqi Olympic Committee officials who were under the orders of Saddam Hussein's eldest son, Uday. OK, I said, no problem. Raed beamed as he jogged into the stadium, proudly holding his national flag. Despite having the eyes of Iraqi officials fixed on him, he did glance to his right. Clinton looked at us, he said. I saw he was very happy when he saw us. He stood up, he was clapping. I couldn't believe it. It was that moment that changed Raed's life forever. From the BBC World Service, this is Amazing Sports Stories. I'm Joel Hammer with another short story, The Olympic Defector. This is the story of one Olympic dream that stretched beyond the sporting arena, one that endangered his life and those of the family he'd leave behind in his homeland. Against the backdrop of geopolitics and a brutal dictator, this is the story of Raed Ahmed and the risks he took and extraordinary lengths he had to go to try and achieve his dream to be free. Born into a Shia Muslim family in the Iraqi city of Basra in 1967, Raed's father was a bodybuilding coach. He started making his own name in weightlifting in the early 1980s and in 1984 was crowned national champion. But his sporting success was taking off against a backdrop of turmoil in his homeland. In 1991, days before the start of the first Gulf War, then US President George H.W. Bush broadcast a message telling Iraqis that there was a way to avoid bloodshed. That is for the Iraqi military and the Iraqi people to take matters into their own hands, to force Saddam Hussein, the dictator, to step aside. He said in a speech. The Shias in the south and Kurds in the north believed this would mean the US would back uprisings against Saddam, and in March they erupted. But as the uprisings spread throughout the country, US officials insisted it was never their policy to intervene in Iraq's internal affairs, nor to remove Saddam from power. With the Gulf War over and the rebels lacking US support, Saddam unleashed one of his most brutal acts of repression against the Shias and the Kurds, killing tens of thousands in just months. Raed recalls witnessing Saddam's cousin, Ali Hassan al-Majid, also known as Chemical Ali, who was tasked with putting down the rebellions, lining up students from the university in Basra and shooting them. UN economic sanctions on Iraq also started to hit ordinary people hard. Raed says people were struggling to afford the most basic food, like bread and rice. He'd already started to think about how to get out. Unlike most Iraqis, Raed had the opportunity to travel abroad for competitions. But being an elite sportsman in Iraq meant coming face to face with Uday Hussein, Saddam's notoriously brutal son, who was president of the Iraqi Olympic Committee and the Iraqi Football Association. Uday's punishment for infractions such as missing a penalty, receiving a red card, or just underachieving included torture with electric cables, forcing people to bathe in raw sewage, and even execution. He'd do whatever he wanted, Raed says. He was Saddam's son. I'd see people when they got out of jail, footballers or basketball players, and they'd say, "Be careful when you go to competition." They killed so many people. When Uday asked if I could bring home a gold medal, I'd say no. For a gold medal, you have to work out for at least 4 years, and it was too hard to do that in Basra. Too little food and water. To weightlift, you need a lot of food and physical therapy. Raed was increasingly seeing international competition as the best way to get out of Iraq for good. He was training harder than ever to make the grade. In 1995, he travelled to China for the World Weightlifting Championships, but he felt the likelihood of Chinese officials handing him back over was too high to make an attempt to escape. But his performance was good enough to secure a place on the Olympic team. He'd be going to Atlanta, Georgia, in America's South. And he knew that the 1996 Games would offer a better opportunity. Before travelling to the Olympics, Raed contacted a friend in the US. He started weighing up the risks. What if they sent him back to Iraq? What would happen to his family? How would he escape from the ever-watchful eyes of the Iraqi officials? Raed wasn't sure whether an escape was realistic when he boarded the plane for America. Upon arriving at the Olympic Village, Raed settled into his surroundings and tried not to raise any suspicions. After all, he had the responsibility of carrying the national flag at the biggest show on earth. And as we know, before the opening ceremony, he was told repeatedly not to look at President Clinton. They wanted to show that Iraqis do not like the United States. They don't like the president, Raed says. The officials were standing directly behind him as he paced around the Olympic track in July 1996. He says they did notice that he was looking at Clinton, but didn't say anything. The Iraqi officials also seemed genuinely surprised that the US president was clapping, he says. Any remaining doubts in his mind was now gone. But now came the problem of how to stay in the US. Raed asked a friend who had access to the Olympic Village for help in getting him out. The pair met in secret, but his minders were becoming suspicious. The Iraqi Olympic officials started to suspect I wanted to stay, and they told me I wasn't allowed and that I'd be jailed if I did. Raed was undeterred. The plan was set. But first, he still needed to compete. But unable to prepare to the levels of his rivals, he finished third bottom of his weight class. But with the competition done, it was time for his escape. On the morning of the 28th of July 1996, the Iraqi Olympic team were preparing to visit a nearby zoo. As the team went down to have breakfast, Raed pretended he'd forgotten something in his room. He quickly packed his bags and rushed to the front of the Olympic Village. Waiting in a car were his friends. Raed hopped in. They drove away. My thoughts were with my family the entire time. I was worried about them and what would happen to them after the Iraqi officials found out I escaped. I wasn't fearful for myself because I knew I was in good hands. I wasn't in any danger. The only fear and worry I had was for my family. Raed, who left with no passport as the Iraqi officials kept hold of all of their documentation, went to meet an Iraqi-American lawyer who'd travelled from New York, and they went to an immigration agency to explain Raed's desire to stay in the US. Then a press conference was arranged, and he faced the world's media. "I love my country," he said. "I just don't like the regime." After the press conference, Raed says Uday Hussein's office rang CNN and told them to pass on a message that he needed to come back because his entire family were being held hostage. His family members were eventually released after Raed refused to return to Iraq, but he could not speak to them for more than a year. Things were very difficult for them. People didn't want to talk to them. My mum was a director at a school and they kicked her out. Once Raed was granted asylum, he says he worked 7 days a week so he could afford to pay for a fake Iraqi passport for his wife. In 1998, she managed to make it to Jordan, where she sought the help of United Nations officials before making it over to the US. Raed and his wife settled in Dearborn, Michigan, in the sometimes frozen American Midwest, and have raised 5 children. Dearborn has a large Arab community, and since 2003, when the Iraq War began, thousands of Iraqi refugees have settled in the area. "Dearborn is like Baghdad," Raed laughs. He set up a used car dealership and continued training as a weightlifter. He also coached local Iraqi football and basketball teams. Then, in 2004, after the fall of Saddam Hussein, he returned to Iraq for the first time. "All my family were waiting for me, and they wanted to see me because they hadn't seen me since 1996. They were all just crying. They didn't believe they'd ever see me again." Raed thinks he'll probably stay in Michigan, although moving somewhere with the temperatures of his homeland has always been alluring. "I want to move down south to Florida, because it's the same weather as Iraq," he laughs. Whenever the Olympic Games come round, he watches the opening ceremony. It's very nostalgic for me, and it reminds me of how far I've come. You've been listening to Amazing Sports Stories, The Olympic Defector, from the BBC World Service. This has been a BBC Sport production, presented by me, Joel Hammer, and produced by myself and Kat Collins. The story was adapted from an article by George Wright on the Insights page of the BBC Sport website. The Sports Commissioning Editor is Anna Doble. The Podcast Commissioning Editor, John Minnell. Next time on Amazing Sports Stories.
The most famous wrestler in Iranian history.
When Ghulam Reza Takhti entered, there was chaos.
Whose legend is surrounded by mystery.
Really? Takhti died? How come?
Immediately the rumors started.
Legend of Takhti.
Was Takhti actually trying to provoke the regime?
Part of Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service.
There's this massive landslide of myth, and somewhere in there is the truth.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.